Giving the Game Away, Part 4. One of the actual authors of the report is Leo Gerster, who is, or was at the time at least, given that her biography has now disappeared from the site, an analyst at ISD. The archives reveal that she previously, quote, worked for 2 years in online extremism-related roles at TRD Policy and the Centre on Radicalisation and Terrorism. TRD Policy describes itself as a pro-liberal order political strategy firm and is visibly the same thing as Article 7, which aims to, quote, put technology at the service of defending democracy, end quote. Its founder, Dr. Garvan Walsh, is a former foreign policy advisor to the British Conservative Party, who, quote, serves as head of communications for the European Policy Centre, end quote. A body boasting, quote, strong links to foundations that share the principles, values and basic objectives of the EPC, end quote. This line is telling us that the EPC is part of the deeply intertwined institutional infrastructure set up by the criminocracy. The EPC has a, quote, long-standing strategic partnership with the King Baudouin Foundation, end quote, which seeks, quote, sustainable and positive change in society, in Belgium, Europe and around the world, end quote. Gerster's other cited former employer, the Centre on Radicalisation and Terrorism, is part of the neocon Henry Jackson Society, which has been described as, quote, a hardline militarist strategy think tank filled with former leaders of intelligence services and deep state operatives, especially connected to Israeli intelligence and the British Conservatives, end quote. The Henry Jackson Society's activities have been openly funded by the Rothschilds, and its 2014 Conference on Inclusive Capitalism, co-hosted by the City of London Corporation and E.L. Rothschild Investment Firm, was attended by Christine Lagarde of the IMF and the future King Charles III, who officially launched the Great Reset in 2020. The other author of the EU commissioned report is Milo Comerford, described as, quote, head of policy and research, counter-extremism, leading ISD's work developing innovative research approaches and policy responses to extremism, end quote. In 2023, he wrote an article trying to make a link between conspiracy beliefs and terrorism for the Global Network on Extremism and Technology, a partner of Tech Against Terrorism, a, quote, public-private partnership working with the global tech industry, end quote, which works with various governments and, quote, intergovernmental organisations such as the United Nations, the Organisation for Security and Cooperation in Europe, and the Commonwealth CVE Secretariat, end quote. Comerford's article is very revealing of the real agenda behind the EU report and the associated grandiose project. He describes, quote, the diverse manifestations of violence that have emanated from conspiracy theories, especially in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, which helped to mainstream such movements across societies, end quote. What violence would this be? Quote, specific examples of conspiracy-related violence include the targeting of 5G masts based on conspiracy theories. Perpetrators are often inspired by a blend of conspiratorial and extremist ideological perspectives in their attack planning. End quote. His definition of harms, as he calls it, proves to be even more spurious than the notion that sabotaging dangerous 5G infrastructure amounts to violence. Comerford writes, quote, it is also important to note that conspiracy theories can also result in a range of harms beyond violence. This can include disengagement from the state and reduced cooperation with government bodies, e.g. homeschooling, refusal to pay taxes, or lower vaccine uptake, as well as longer-term threats to democratic institutions and civic culture, end quote. This is unbelievable stuff. He's actually suggesting that not wanting to take the big pharma jab or preferring to educate your children at home amounts to harms worthy of being discussed in an article with terrorism and violent in its title. In his next paragraph, Comerford essentially dismantles his claim about, quote, longer-term threats to democratic institutions and civic culture when he notes, quote, as is explored in a later insight in this series, focused on policy responses to violent conspiracy movements, this threat to democracy framing is increasingly being adopted by governments in their conceptualization of these threats, end quote. So there we have it. The so-called threat to democracy is just a framing by which authorities demonize dissent. The same goes for all the violence, terrorism, and hate that Comerford and his like are constantly invoking to justify the silencing of all criticism of the system they serve. It's all just propaganda, and here he is admitted as such. It turns out that the propagandist Comerford was previously, quote, senior analyst at the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change, a sinister organisation whose connections are explored in my article on Tony Blair and the Rothschilds. He has also had the honour of speaking at an emerging leaders conference staged in Israel by the World Union of Jewish Students and B'nai B'rith International, the global voice of the Jewish community, as it calls itself. Funnily enough, another confirmed speaker identified on the B'nai B'rith site is none other than Katharina von Schnurbein, European Commission Coordinator on Combating Anti-Semitism and Fostering Jewish Life, and 2018 recipient of B'nai B'rith Europe's Human Rights Prize. It's a small world for globalists. So to wrap up, the EU strategy on combating anti-Semitism and fostering Jewish life, 2021 to 2030, is based on assumptions derived from sources that are as far from independent and non-partisan as is possible to be. Simply by following the trail of breadcrumbs laid down by von Schnurbein's leadership of this grandiose project and the ISD report she cites as justification, we come across numerous players in the criminocratic global game that these people would like us to believe does not actually exist. Because of the repeated multiple interconnections between these various elements that I've also described in previous articles, it is quite clear to me that they constitute one single entity, a self-concealing, corrupt global governance that I have termed the criminocracy. These criminocrats make no secret of the fact that they wish to control what we do and what we say, but they're lying when they say this is out of a desire to prevent bad things like anti-Semitism, extremism, hate, or terrorism. As Milo Comerford rather foolishly spelled out in his article for the Global Network on Extremism and Technology, their idea of dangerous harms to be combated includes anything such as, quote, disengagement from the state and reduced cooperation with government bodies, end quote, that involves us remaining or moving outside the domination of a system that they aim to make entirely inclusive. The criminocracy would like to close down all discussion of his existence and ill deeds by means of deceitful gaslighting. Starting from the false assumption that there is no such thing as the system, they insist that those who dare say otherwise are therefore necessarily bad, extremists, conspiracy theorists, and disinformation actors who must be silenced by any possible means. However, embedded in their approach is a major strategic error, which it is now impossible for them to rectify. The use of the anti-Semitism smear has worked very well for them so far, but it is also a double-edged sword. In order to explain to the public why it is anti-Semitic to criticise a system which they claim does not exist, they've had to themselves point out that many leading figures on the global stage are Jewish, such as George Soros, or closely linked to Jewish Zionist or Zionist networks, such as Emmanuel Macron vis-à-vis the Rothschilds. They've walked into a logical trap in which the very act of denouncing an analysis they consider dangerous itself reinforces and propagates that analysis. People naturally ask themselves why it would be anti-Semitic to criticise the banking system or Big Pharma if those entities were not, in fact, largely controlled by Jewish interests. But at the same time, they ponder how could it be automatically anti-Semitic to criticise those entities simply on the basis that they were largely controlled by Jewish interests. If I condemned a local drug dealer who happened to be, I don't know, Icelandic, would that make me Icelandophobic, or would it just mean that I don't like drug dealers? Should my right to condemn drug dealing be removed because it risked stirring up hate against Icelandic people? Should the whole of my community be sternly told never to condemn drug dealing because to do so would threaten the well-being of Icelandic residents, even though these people amounted to only 0.22% of the local population and most of them had nothing to do with drugs? Should new laws be passed making it illegal for the other 99.78% of us to refer to drug dealing and the people behind it because of the risk of inciting anti-Icelandic hate? Should the local council pour huge amounts of taxpayers' cash into a grandiose project on combating Icelandophobia and fostering Icelandic life on the basis of the allegedly anti-Icelandic nature of all criticism of drug dealing? And if the local authority figure proposing all this was known to hang out with the drug dealer and his mates, some of whom were mightily interested in the funding opportunities presented by the Icelandophobia project, where would that leave his credibility? Trying to disqualify and ban all analysis exposing the existence of the corrupt global mafia on the basis that it amounts to anti-Jewish hate is, in truth, a fatal own goal. It gives the game away to such an extent that I believe it will inevitably lead to the ignominious collapse of the whole criminocratic racket. And just a footnote on the figures cited at the end there. The Institute for Jewish Policy Research gives a variety of figures for the Jewish population of the EU, depending on the tricky definition of Jewish, ranging from 781,000 to 1.5 million. If we take 1 million as a fair figure and bear in mind that the total population of the EU is 445 million, we can quickly see that one in 445 people in Europe are Jewish, hence the 0.22%.